Shivrena Bhakti Yogena Sajeta Purusham Param. My waters. Akamaha, one who has transcended all material desires. Sarvakamaha, one who has the sum total of all material desires. That would be a lot. Va, either. Mokshakamaha, one who desires liberation. Udaraji, with broader intelligence. Tivrena, with great force. Bhakti Yogena, by devotional service to the Lord. Yajeta, should worship. Purusham, the Lord. Param, the Supreme Whole. Srila Prabhupada's translation. A person who has broader intelligence, whether he be full of all material desire, without any material desire, or desiring liberation, must by all means worship the Supreme Whole, the Personality of Godhead. So this is reasonably long purport and slightly technical. So this is an extremely important verse in the Bhagavatam. So if we can try to be attentive, sometimes when people are reading the purport, everybody just zones out. So if we could try to be attentive. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Shri Krishna, is described in the Bhagavad Gita as Purushottama, or the Supreme Personality. So why do you think Prabhupada's saying that? For what in this verse is prompting Srila Prabhupada to say that? Yes, Purusham Param. And especially Srila Sridhar Swami, you notice in the previous verse, it also has the words Purusham Param. And Srila Sridhar Swami says in the previous verse, that refers to Paramatma, and in this verse, it refers to Bhagavan, which is mentioned by Srila Jiva Goswami in his various sandarbhas when he comments on this verse. So Srila Prabhupada, starting out, dealing with Purusham Param. Going on, it is he only who can award liberation to the impersonalists by absorbing such aspirants in the Brahmajyoti, the bodily rays of the Lord. So why would he be saying that? Yes, mokshakama. So why should those with mokshakama worship Purusham Param? Because he's the only one who can give them moksha. Going on, the Brahmajyoti is not separate from the Lord, as the glowing sun ray is not independent of the sun disk. Therefore, one who desires to merge into the supreme impersonal Brahmajyoti must also worship the Lord by bhakti yoga, as recommended here in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Now that sounds a little peculiar, doesn't it? If you're an impersonalist, you should still worship the person. going on. Bhakti yoga is especially stressed here as the means of all perfection. In the previous chapters, it has been stated that bhakti yoga is the ultimate goal of both the karma, of both karma yoga and gyan yoga. And in the same way, in this chapter, it is emphatically declared that bhakti yoga is the ultimate goal of the different varieties of worship of different demigods. Bhakti yoga, thus being the supreme means of self-realization, is recommended here. Everyone must therefore seriously take up the methods of bhakti yoga, even though one aspires for material enjoyment or liberation from material bondage. Are you translating there in the back? Okay. So I'd like to ask you a favor. If I am speaking too fast, or if there's something you don't understand, can you signal me and we'll sort it? Thank you. Okay. So Prabhupada just talked about the Mokshakama people, talked about Purushampuram and the Mokshakama people. Now, next paragraph, Akama. Akama is one who has no material desire. Of course, the literal meaning of Akama is one who has no desire. Right? So Akama is one who has no material desire. Now, Prabhupada is going to explain how no desire means no material desire. Is that something he talks about a lot? Is that something Srila Prabhupada talks about a lot? Why does he talk about that a lot? Why does Srila Prabhupada often explain that having no desires means having no material desires? Not possible to have no desire is not possible. Main contextual? Yes. Thank you. Because that is the main contention between the Vaishnavas and the Mayavadis. Yes. And that's part of Prabhupada's main mission that we have in his pranam mantra, Nirvasesha Shunyavadi, to counteract the people who are preaching only impersonalism. So the people preaching only impersonalism will take this verse or these kind of statements. Do these statements occur often in Shastra? That one should be free of desire. Yes? Okay. Akama is one, going again, Akama is one who has no material desire. A living being naturally being the part and parcel of the supreme whole Purusham Purnam has as his material function, now it's interesting he's saying here Purusham Purnam instead of Purusham Param, has as his natural function to serve the Supreme Being, just as the parts and parcels of the body or the limbs of the body are naturally meant to serve the complete body. Desireless means, therefore, not to be inert like the stone, but to be conscious of one's actual position and thus desire satisfaction only from the Supreme Lord. Srila Jiva Goswami has explained this desirelessness as Bhajaniya Param Purusha Sukamatra Sakukatvam in his Sandarbha. This means that one should feel happy only by experiencing the happiness of the Supreme Lord. This intuition of the living being is sometimes manifested even during the conditioned stage of a living being in the material world. Now, this is a very important point because there are people, including some apparent members of our Gaudiya Sampradaya, who are making propaganda that bhakti is not inherent in the soul. And they are making this propaganda quite strongly, and they are writing books on this topic, and so forth. So this evidence that Srila Prabhupada is about to give is evidence for and indicative of the fact that the spiritual nature of the pure soul is indicated through matter. Like Prabhupada says in the preface to the Nectar of Devotion, that everyone has a propensity to love. I hope you've all read that. If you haven't, please do yourself a favor and read the preface to the Nectar Devotion. It's not very long, and it's so blissful. And Prabhupada says even a tiger has a propensity to love. Yeah? So here he's saying everyone has this propensity to see the happiness of others as the same as their own happiness, to not make a differentiation between my happiness and others' happiness. So he's about to give some evidence that we can tell that this is part of the soul, because even in a conditioned state, it shows up. Everything that is part of the soul has to show up somewhere. It may be in some twisted way. Okay, so let's read this again. This intuition of the living being, let's go back one more. This means that one should feel happy only by experiencing the happiness of the Supreme Lord. This intuition, so the intuition to find one's happiness in the happiness of God, is sometimes manifested even during the conditioned stage of a living being in the material world. And such intuition is expressed in the manner of altruism, philanthropy, socialism, communism, etc., by the undeveloped minds of less intelligent persons. Now, is Prabhupada saying that if we had a perfect society, we would stop to care about other people? No. That would be a really awful society. But he's saying that if we had a perfect society and we cared about Krishna's happiness, we would still do philanthropy, but we would do it to please Krishna. Whereas unintelligent people are substituting material philanthropy for Krishna. Can you understand the distinction?
Yes.
Going on. In the mundane field, such an outlook of doing good to others in the form of society, community, family, country, or humanity is a partial manifestation of the same original feeling in which a pure living entity feels happiness by the happiness of the Supreme Lord. I find this sort of statement by Srila Prabhupada very helpful to us, how we can look at things in the world, even things that are materially conditioned, and we can see, oh, that's an indication of the reality. It's like you look at the shadow of something and you can understand something of the reality. Make sense? Yes? Going on, such superb feelings were exhibited by the damsels of Rajabhumi for the happiness of the Lord. Now, actually, Srila Rupa Goswami states in his Ujjwala Nilamani that only the gopis feel this 100%. That even the Dwarka queens, it's not 100%. But for the Rajagopis, they have this, what he calls, sa-artha, where Krishna's happiness and their happiness are completely one. Going on, the gopis love the Lord without any return, and this is the perfect exhibition of the akama spirit. Kama spirit, or the desire for one's own satisfaction, is fully exhibited in the material world, whereas the spirit of akama is fully exhibited in the spiritual world. Now Srila Prabhupada is going to go back to talking about moksha kama, and he's going to make an observation that is made by Srila Jiva Goswami, who writes about this verse in several of his sandarbhas. Going on, thoughts of becoming one with the Lord or being merged in the Brahma Jyoti can also be exhibitions of the kama spirit if they are desires for one's own satisfaction to be free from material miseries. And Jiva Goswami makes an interesting statement. He says that in one sense, moksha kama is more than sarva kama, because the materialist want temporary material relief in a small way, and temporary material happiness in a small way, whereas the moksha kamis want full material release in a big way. So you could say it's a bigger desire. And of course, Prabhupada talks about this sometimes, right? The biggest desire is I want to be God. Right? Okay. Going on. A pure devotee does not want liberation so that he may be relieved from the miseries of life. Whoa, that's hard, isn't it? I find this hard. Many of you find this hard? Is it hard? Isn't it hard to not care? Especially when you're really, really, really suffering? I mean, it's easy if there's a little suffering. Like it's a little hot. Or you're a little hungry. I don't care. But if you're in extreme pain, like a 12 out of 10, to just say, well, I don't care about relief, is that easy? I personally find it quite difficult. So this is the standard of a pure devotee. Anyone here who thought they were a pure devotee? Yeah. What I find is when we think that we're very advanced, Krishna puts us in situations and we go, oops, guess not. So Prabhupada says again, a pure devotee does not want liberation so that he may be relieved from the miseries of life. Even without so-called liberation, a pure devotee is aspirant for the satisfaction of the Lord. Influenced by the Kama spirit, Arjuna declined to fight in the Kurukshetra battlefield because he wanted to save his relatives for his own satisfaction. But being a pure devotee, he agreed to fight on the instruction of the Lord because he came to his senses and realized that satisfaction of the Lord at the cost of his own satisfaction was his prime duty. Thus he became a kama. That is the perfect stage of a perfect living being. Now, of course, what happens, Prabhupada says here, right, at the cost of his own satisfaction. Does this mean that the devotee is miserable by pleasing Krishna? No. Actually, when we please Krishna, we become completely satisfied. So when Prabhupada is saying here at the cost of his satisfaction, it means the cost of his illusory satisfaction, at the cost of his satisfaction that isn't actually satisfaction. You follow? But I think sometimes we can read this and we think, oh, that means the more miserable I am in Krishna consciousness, the more advanced I am. Chant Hare Krishna and be miserable. Actually, Prabhupada said, if you're not joyful, you cannot make any advancement. So we should be very careful with a statement like this that we don't misinterpret it to mean, okay, let me serve Krishna and the more it hurts, the more pure I am. That's not correct. Giving up our material satisfaction means giving up the things that are actually causing us misery. Was Arjuna's attachment to the Kuru part of his dynasty causing him misery? How much misery did that cause him? A lot, right? Yeah. Okay. Going on, Udaraji means one who has a broader outlook. People with desires for material enjoyment worship small demigods. I'm scared to say that. I'm like, it's okay, guys. Prabhupada's not afraid of offending them, you know. And such intelligence is condemned in the Bhagavad Gita 7:20 as Ritta Jnana, the intelligence of one who has lost his senses. One cannot obtain any result from demigods without getting sanction from the Supreme Lord. Therefore, a person with a broader outlook can see that the ultimate authority is the Lord, even for material benefits. Under the circumstances, one with a broader outlook, even with a desire for material enjoyment or for liberation, should take to the worship of the Lord directly. And everyone, whether in akama or sakama or moksha kama, should worship the Lord with great expedience. This implies that bhakti yoga may be perfectly administered. Now, this is interesting because here Prabhupada's defining what word here in the verse. There's a word he's picking up here, great expedience. Tivrena, yes. Now, he's going to expand on this a little, and I find this extremely significant in terms of the definition of pure bhakti. To worship the Lord with great expedience. This implies that bhakti yoga may be perfectly administered without any mixture of karma and jnana. So this is how Prabhupada's defining Tivrena. As the unmixed sun ray is very forceful and is therefore called Tivra, similarly unmixed bhakti yoga of hearing, chanting, etc. may be performed by one and all regardless of inner motive. Akama sarvakamova moksha kama udaraji tivrena bhakti yogena yajeta purushamparam. A person who has broader intelligence, whether he be full of all material desire, without any material desire, or desiring liberation, must by all means worship the Supreme Whole, the personality of Godhead. So bhakti is the answer to everybody. Whatever you want, bhakti. Like there's some stores where you can get pretty much everything. You know, not really. Just like Amazon, they have the arrow going from A to Z, A to Z, right? Like you can get, can you really get everything there? I'm sure there's some things you can't get there. Yeah? Not many, but some. But people think, oh, let me go there. I'll be able to get everything. You know, you have some huge store where they carry, you know, groceries and hardware and tires. Or sometimes not just the store, but like a shopping center. And they have all different kinds of stores. And here you can get everything you want. You don't need to go anyplace else. Now, Baling Maharaj made the mistake of thinking he was that person. He told Vamandev, he said, why are you asking for 3 paces of land? You should ask me for something so great that you'll never have to ask anyone else for anything ever. Could Bali give that? Could he give that? No. And so Vamandev showed him a very interesting way. No, you don't have that capacity. But one should go to the place where one can get all one's desires fulfilled. And that one will be so satisfied that one will never have to ask anyone for anything ever. So to go to the right person in the right way, to go to Purushamparam with Tivrena Bhakti Yogena. All right. So why is it that we can get everything from Krishna? And what is Tivra Bhakti? And how are we going to get this kind of intelligence? Because frankly, most of us aren't that intelligent. Honestly, even if we're sitting in this room, we may still not be that intelligent all the time. So what does this mean? So I really like Jiva Goswami's explanation. I thought, wow, this is just perfect. He said, yes, you may get what you desire from someone else or something else. That's true. But when you engage in bhakti to get your desires, you get a bonus. You know how some places advertise, sign up for this. You get, this is what we give you. And we give you a free bonus. You've seen this? In some places, we give you this free bonus, this free bonus, this free bonus. So with Krishna, you're going to get what you want. You're going to get liberation. You're going to get satisfaction of your material desires. And you're going to get his lotus feet. Which maybe you didn't even know that you wanted. And maybe you didn't even know how valuable it was. I mean, sometimes businesses do that. Like you order something and you get what you ordered, and then they send you something extra that you didn't order. And you find out, this is a great thing. I didn't know. I didn't know that I wanted this. I didn't know that I needed this. Haven't we all sometimes gotten things that we didn't know how good they were? We didn't even know they existed, maybe. And someone says, here, I can, I don't know if I want this. And you get it, and you're like, wow, I didn't even know about this. I remember many, many years ago, my daughter showing something that something I could do on Microsoft Word, probably like, 25 years ago. And I was like, wow, I didn't know I could do that. I didn't know that was a feature. All this time I was doing this and I could have done this. So Krishna surprises you. You know, you're just out selling mangoes and oranges, and you're just going door to door selling mangoes and oranges and bananas. And you just go to this house, one of the houses, you're going door to door, and in this house you see this charming child. And the charming child comes to you with a handful of grains that are falling out of his little hand as he's coming, and you're charmed by this little child. And you came there just to sell your goods. You didn't come there for anything else. And somehow you fall in love. And you turn and you get a basket full of jewels. Far more than you desired. The fruit wasn't worth that much money, you know. And our acharyas say that she didn't just get a basket of jewels, she got prema. So that's exactly what Krishna's like. Even you come to him for some nasty thing. Prabhupada tells the story of this thief who was walking by a Bhagavatam class outside, and he heard the speaker say about how Krishna's covered with jewels. And he got very interested, and he thought, oh, let me find this child. Very easy to steal the jewels from a little child. And he heard that Krishna is in Vrindavan. So he travels to Vrindavan thinking, I'm going to steal these jewels. Where's this Krishna? Where's this Krishna? And there's baby Krishna. Not baby, but little child Krishna. Like, you know, maybe 3 years old. And, oh, what do you want? And the thief became mesmerized, like the fruit seller, and he just out and out said, I want your jewels. Not like the thieves with Lord Chaitanya who just, you know, offered him sweets and put him on their shoulder. But he just said, I want your jewels. And he says, oh, I can't do that. Mother Yasoda, my mother, she'll be very angry if I come home without my ornaments. And he fell in love. He didn't intend to fall in love. That wasn't his purpose. And of course, the most famous story is Dhruva. Dhruva was insulted. All of us feel insulted sometimes and angry. He wanted revenge. He wanted to get revenge by having a kingdom. And he was so determined, Tivrena, I mean, he was really, really determined. And he's meditating on Vishnu. I mean, he was so determined. He became one with the Lord in a sense, and his breathing and the universal breathing were the same. And when the Lord manifested externally, he fell in love. And the Lord said, fine, you can have it, what you wanted. You can have your father's kingdom for 36,000 years and never become old. And you can have the pole star as your kingdom. You can have everything you wanted. And he said, I don't even care anymore. I have you. Even he felt sorry afterwards. He's like, why was I Sarvakama? So you get a bonus. You go someplace else, yes, you may get what you want. You might. But you don't get the bonus. And not only that, when you get what you won't even be happy with it. Hiranyakashipu went to Lord Brahma with a similar desire as Dhruva. I want to own everything. I want to own the biggest thing. He also had a desire for vengeance. He had a desire for vengeance against the Lord for killing Hiranyaka. And Lord Brahma said, yes, you can have this, you can have this. All the mystic powers, no rival. And then he got it. Was he happy? How do we know Hiranyakashipu wasn't happy? Two things it says in the Bhagavatam. One, he was always intoxicated. Happy people don't take intoxication. You're already happy. Why do you need to take an intoxicant? To pretend to be happy. To artificially manipulate your brain chemicals so that you can imagine you're happy when you're not. And he was always yelling at the demigods for no reason. Have you ever seen people like this? They yell at others for no reason? Yeah? Immediately you can understand it's not a happy person. Right? Happy people don't do that. So he got everything. But he wasn't happy. So if you go to some source other than Krishna, you may get what you want. In fact, you will. If you do things right, you do the right karma, you worship the right demigods, you will get what you want. Maybe not immediately, but you will eventually. But you won't like it, because we're not going to like anything material ultimately. And even if you say, well, I've had things material that I liked, but they were temporary, right? And therefore, they're also a source of pain. When people have the perfect marriage, they suffer more when their spouse dies. You follow? You have the perfect car. You suffer more when it gets crashed. And, oh, it was just a car. Oh, it's my car. So you go other places. Even if you get what you want, you won't be happy. And there's no bonus. So whatever you want, go to the place where you're going to be fully satisfied. And you get the bonus. You get unlimited, perfect, real spiritual satisfaction. Even if that isn't what you wanted in the first place. Even if you didn't know about it. And therefore we respect all religionists, even if they're materialistic. And most religionists are materialistic. Doesn't matter whether they're Christians or Muslims or Hindus or Jews or whatever they are, or Buddhists, most religionists are materialistic. Like Krishna says, the people come to him for four reasons. The vast majority of people who come to the Hare Krishna movement at least start out being materialistic, according to Krishna. But we respect, okay, you're worshiping God. You're worshiping God. You're worshiping the actual Purusham Param. That's good. Eventually, may not be one life, but eventually you will come to the perfection. So then there's how to worship. Tivrena. Now, it's very interesting. So here who knows Srila Goswami's verse about the definition of pure devotional service. Anyabhilasita sunyam jnana karma anavritam anukulena krishnanu shilanam bhaktir uttamam. So this verse is eliminating the first line. Anyabhilasita sunyam. And that's why I find what Srila Prabhupada says at the end here to be absolutely fascinating. He says here, unmixed bhakti. So if it's not mixed with karma and It's not mixed with karma and gyan. He says here again, this implies that bhakti yoga may be perfectly administered without any mixture of karma and gyan, as the unmixed sunray is very forceful and is therefore called tivra. Similarly, unmixed bhakti yoga of hearing chanting may be performed by one and all regardless of inner motive. So Prabhupada's basically saying, forget about the first line right now. Are you all understanding? Anyabhilasita sunyam means you're in the akama category. But he's saying, never mind. If you're in the sarvakama or mokshakama category, that's fine. Doesn't matter. Which is a relief, isn't it? Anybody here prepared to say they're 100% in the akama category? Maybe you're just shy. But we generally, like I say, if we're suffering enough, we want moksha. At least I do. I'm like, sorry, Krishna. I want the misery to go away. Or there's things we want in this world. We want people to respect us. Ouch. Or, you know, maybe we really want that pair of shoes. Or maybe we really want that gulab jamun. Prabhupada said, forget about that. Anyabhilasita sunyam. Just the jnana karma anavratam, anukulena krishna anushilanam. That's enough. So if we look at what is the primary definition, is just anushilanam and anukulena. According to Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Tour and Srila Jiva Goswami, who comment on this verse. In order for bhakti to be pure bhakti, it's got to have those two primary characteristics. Anushilanam means it has to be devotional service. It can't just be devotion. I love you. Do you ever do anything for me? No. Will you ever do anything for me? No. Is that worth anything? One of my devotee friends had always told me, Urmila, I'm always there to help you out if you need anything. So one time I called her. I said, I have a doctor's appointment in an hour, and my car just broke down. Can you help me out? She says, you know, it's my day off. I just want to sit at home. I'm like, okay. Got that. Devotion means you do something. And do something anushilanam. Shilanam can mean with the mind, the body, and the words. Do something for Krishna physically. Do something for Krishna mentally. Do something for Krishna verbally. Show our devotion practically. I guess it was like, how many years ago? 46 years ago, I guess. In Boston at the Sunday feast, this one woman came to the feast and she said, well, this is very nice, but I'm a disciple of Jesus. And I said, well, that's nice. I said, how could I tell that without your telling me? How could I look at your life? You don't say a word to me and I would know you're a disciple of Jesus. She said, well, you couldn't. It's all in my heart. But that's not anushilanam. No, anushraddha is something like that. I believe in God. What do you do about that? Nothing. Or people say, I'm Muslim, I'm Christian, I'm Hindu. What do you do? Nothing. Maybe they light a lamp on Diwali and have a feast with their friends. But it's about having a feast with their friends, you follow? Or you just have a Christmas tree and buy gifts or something, but you're not actually going to church. It doesn't mean anything. I overheard a conversation many years ago between two of my godbrothers, and one of them says, I never see you at Mangalartik. And the other one said, well, my heart's there. And the first one said, well, why don't you bring the rest of your body? So I have to do something for Krishna. And the other thing is anukulyena. The motive has to be to please Krishna. Now, this is where it gets tricky. Because anya bilasita sunyam means I want to please Krishna just to please Krishna. Because I have a sense of a oneness with Krishna, as Prabhupada's talking about in this purport, that pleasing Krishna is my pleasure. And again, we all experience something of that in this world. So I gave this example last night in the seminar in terms of charity, but it's well worth repeating that if in countries where Christmas is a big thing, if the stores said, aren't you tired of this gift-giving thing? You don't usually get the presents you want anyway. Why don't you take the money you would spend on gifts and spend it on yourself? And that way you can buy yourself whatever you want. Would that work? Would people save up all year for Christmas to go and buy themselves what they want? Would that work? Yes? No? No. It's the main income for the shops because people want to buy presents for others. Yes? We get more pleasure by pleasing others than by pleasing ourselves directly. And Prabhupada gives so many examples of this. Logically, it doesn't make sense on a materialistic logic, but it's indicative of the nature of the soul. And we all experience this sometimes. Someone you love is happy, and that's your happiness. You don't feel a separation between yourself and the person you love. You do something for that person, they're happy, and that's your happiness. So really, that is what's talked about with anukulyena. But that kind of anukulyena goes with anyabilasita sunyam. So how can you have anukulyena if you have sarvakama or mokshakama? Because then you're trying to please Krishna because you want something from him. It's kind of like rajasic charity. You know, I didn't want to give, but my boss told me I should give, and I want to keep my job and make my boss happy, so I'll give something. Or even my guru told me to give, and I want the other devotees to like me, and I want people to say I'm a good disciple, so therefore I give. That's rajasic charity. Or I give so my name will be up on the wall and everybody will think I'm a very good person. So I'm going to please Krishna, and if I please Krishna, he'll liberate me. He'll cure my disease. Or ultimately, he'll bring me to the Brahma Jyoti. Or I want to please Krishna, so I'll pass my exam, or so I'll make a lot of money. And I know that he's the gatekeeper. But the trick is, if you try to please Krishna, even for an ulterior motive, Krishna is really interesting about that. And he just takes the I want to please Krishna part. So those two things have to be there. The secondary things are the anyabilasita sunyam and the jnanakarma anavritam. But here Prabhupada is saying, if you want this to work, don't mix with karma and jnana. All right. How do we get this broad intelligence? How do we get this udara vi? Because most people running around the world don't have it. Most people running around the world are trying to fulfill their desires in another way. And even we, who are supposed to be devotees of Krishna, maybe we're already first initiated, maybe we're second initiated, maybe we've been hanging around for decades. But still, we may think, I don't always have to go to Krishna for that. I can get that somehow separately from Krishna. Oh, I don't want to bother Krishna with that material desire. I'll just work on it separately. I'll go to Krishna and pretend, my dear Lord Krishna, I just want pure devotional service. And then for that other thing I want, I'll depend on my intelligence or my connections. I won't depend on Krishna. So how do we get this intelligence? Any thoughts? How do we get this Udara D? By Sankirtan. Okay. How does that work? Oh, Sumedasa. Well, then you have to have Sumedasa to do Sankirtan in the first place. Will Sankirtan also give you Sumedasa? Because that sloka was, if you have Sumedasa, you will do Sankirtan. But does doing Sankirtan also give you this intelligence? Yes. How does that work? Huh? It's reciprocal. All right. Do we have some nice verses about this in the Bhagavad Gita? Siddhami Buddhi Yogam Tam Yena Mamu Prayanti Che. The four main verses in the 10th chapter. Right? Where Krishna starts out saying he is everything. What is that verse? 10:8? Aham sarvasya prabhava mata sarvam prabhartate iti matva bhajante mam buddhubhava samanvita then machchita magata pranam bodhayantas prasram katayantas chumam nityam trishanti cha ramanti cha. So there you have a little clue. Trishanti cha ramanti cha. So you start to talk about Krishna. You start to chant about Krishna. You start to do things about Krishna. And you start feeling satisfied and happy. And then what's the next verse? 10:10? Tesham satate yuktanam bhajatam vritti purvakam didami buddhi yogantam yenamam upayanti che. This buddhi yoga, is that very similar to this Udara D? Yeah? Krishna starts giving you intelligence. And what's the next one? Tesham eva nukam partam aham agyana jantamaha nasayam yatma bhava sto gyana dipena bhashvrita. So somehow or other get some connection with the Lord. And then you start getting satisfied, start getting happy, and you start getting the realization, oh, this is the only place I need to go. I don't need to look outside of Krishna. And one way of defining one of the six items of surrender is realizing that one is not independent in fulfilling one's desires. Now, this verse is letting us know something that's extremely important to our advancement in Krishna consciousness. The chances are that everyone here, or most of you, maybe some of you are prema bhaktas in disguise, as Maharaj Rahugana says, you never know. But any of us here who have material desires or desires for liberation, which I would assume is the majority of us, according to Manushinam Sahasresu, where should we go to for those? We should go to Krishna. And we should be honest. Does Krishna already know? Does he already know? Yes. Just like you walk in Loy Bazaar and the merchants all say, Hare Krishna! Hare Krishna! What are they really saying? Please come here and spend your money. Are we intelligent enough to know that? And they have a picture of Prabhupada in their shop. Why? They know. Then we ISKCON devotees will say, oh, they like Prabhupada. I'll shop there. So we're just little jivas, and we know that the shopkeepers are chanting Hare Krishna, but they're really saying, give me your money. We know that. So Krishna's at least as smart as we are. You understand? If we can understand that, he can understand that. There's no use pretending. Maybe we want to pretend to the other jivas because we haven't come to the Trinada P platform. That's something else. Maybe we want to try to convince all the other members of the Hare Krishna movement that we're actually Akama. Okay, whatever. But we can't convince Krishna. He already knows. He's like, hey, come on. Sarvashya chaham riti sani viso. Like, I know you better than you know yourself. You're not going to hide this from me. So better to be honest. When we're honest, the only person we're really being honest with is ourselves. because Krishna already knows. The only person we're fooling is ourselves. I'm so advanced. I have no desires. So it's very helpful to ask Krishna, Krishna, would you show me what sarva-kama and moksha-kama I have? Would you please reveal to me the truth about myself? Let me see myself honestly. This is the essence of anartha nivritti. Of course, we don't want to see ourselves honestly because we know we won't like what we see. But then we can't progress. And then Krishna will show us, you're attached to this, you're attached to this, you're attached to this, you're attached to this. And we can say, my Lord, can you show me the real nature of these desires? By the way, all this can happen very quietly in the privacy of your room. It's not that you have to have some heavy-duty thing happen to you in your life. Okay? These kind of prayers doesn't mean you get in a car accident or all your money gets taken away. It can happen very quietly while you're chanting, while you're reading the Shastra. My Lord, show me the nature of these desires. And Krishna will show you the nature of these desires, and you'll see that they're ugly. Desires for liberation are ugly. They're disgusting, actually. Desires for overlordship, they're grotesque. Prabhupada said that a person, Anbhava, doesn't have material desires because he sees the naked form of those material desires. Do you all know the story of Ulysses from the Iliad and the Odyssey, or do they not teach that in schools anymore? So this is the Greek mythology. So Ulysses is coming back from the war. He was victorious, and he was told of many obstacles. Prabhupada refers to the Iliad quite a few times. And one of the obstacles was an island full of witches. They were called the Sirens. This is where we get the English word siren. They sing very beautifully. And anyone who would hear their singing would think they were beautiful women on a beautiful island full of coconut trees and mango trees and waterfalls. Whereas actually they were old ugly witches who ate sailors and they were in a desert. So Ulysses heard this and he told all the men, put wax in your ears so you will not hear the sirens. He said, but tie me to the mast. I want to hear. He said, but don't follow any of my instructions while we pass this island. So the men who had their hearing blocked, they actually saw the desert with the witches, and they're just rowing, rowing, let's get out of here. And Ulysses is going, stop, stop. When we see Maya for what it is, then all these attachments just vanish. So we ask Krishna, please show me what are my attachments and what is the naked form of my attachment. And you can ask him to show you sweetly and privately. Of course, that means you have to respond when he shows you sweetly and privately. You follow? Like when Krishna wants the cows to go, he calls them by name. If they still don't come, what does he do? He plays his flute, then he has his horn, and then he has his stick. So don't let him bring out his stick. You can ask, please show me, sweetly, quietly, privately, what are my attachments and what is the naked form of my attachments. And I promise you, when you show me that, I will give them up. I will let go of them. Take our attachments. That's the best way to take our attachments to Krishna. Now, if you're not willing to do the best way, the second best way is, my dear Lord, I am shamelessly asking you, I want a handsome man to marry. I want a beautiful girl to marry. I want a red car. I want everyone to praise me. Jai Prabhu, Jai Prabhu. And throw flower petals at my feet. And I want that Golubjaman. And Lord, I'm asking you, And whether you give me or not, I accept. That's second best way. Does that make sense? I accept. If you don't give me, I will not go elsewhere. If you don't give me now, I will wait. I will trust your judgment. I will put these desires before you. So that's the second best way. And this way we will come to having this broad intelligence. So Krishna consciousness is open for everybody. It doesn't matter. We don't have a guard at the door. Are you pure? But Krishna consciousness itself will bring us to this purity because it gives us this amazing bonus that we didn't even know existed, and we didn't even know we wanted, and we didn't even know we needed. And that once we get that, we decide, I didn't need all this broken pieces of glass. So I was told I could go a little over time, and so I took advantage. If you have to leave early, I'm supposed to tell you there's a table downstairs of some of my books, if you're interested. Anybody have any questions, comments, additions, subtractions, chastisements? Anybody? Everybody's just hungry?
Hare Krishna, Mama.
Hare Krishna.
Thank you very much for a very wonderful class. Mataji, in Chaitanya Charitamrita, in one of the sections where Lord Krishna is talking about anyone who comes to me, and if he asks me anything, I won't give him. Because it is a poison, I know. I will give the nectar of my lotus feet to him instead of fulfilling his desires.
Well, that's not really instead of. In other words, let's say this has happened to me. Like, I've gone to a shop and I've asked for something, and they said, you know, I have something a lot better that will meet all of your needs even better than this. Has that happened to everybody?
Yes.
Yeah. So it's like that. Now you could say the shopkeeper didn't sell you what you came for. But did the shopkeeper fulfill your desires? Did the shopkeeper fulfill your desires if they gave you something better for the same purpose? Yes? No?
Yes. Yes.
So like that.
Sometimes living entities attach to certain desires. Just like in case of Dhruva Maharaj, before he began his penances and the services, he wanted desperately that kingdom.
Correct.
So similarly, when sometimes a living entity like us, we are attached to certain desires which we want. Okay, Krishna, you might have better.
In that form, you're saying.
Yeah.
So the shopkeeper may say, this does what you want much better and it's even cheaper. And you go, no, I want the thing I came for. So in most cases, then Krishna will say, yes, go ahead. Like he did to Dhruva. But he has the other offer. My dear Lord, I've come to you for this. And he says, I have something that will give you all the benefits you desire from that thing. You understand? Just like suppose you want money. Everybody wants some money. Even brahmacharis want some money. Why do we want money? Money gives us freedom, gives us security. That's what they call investments, securities, right? Gives us status, gives us access to pleasure. But suppose you had all of that without having to have money. Would you care about money? No. You know, if you have some rich friend and the rich friend says, you can stay in my villa and I'll have 100 servants at your beck and call and there's a car, you can go wherever you want. will serve you whatever you want to eat. You wouldn't care whether you have cash in your pocket or not. You wouldn't need it. And if you say to him, I'd rather have money, I'd say, okay, fine. So what Krishna tries to do is when people go to him with some specific desire, he says, I have a much better way of meeting your needs. I have a way of meeting your needs where you'll never have to ask for anything from anybody ever, and you'll feel completely satisfied. I'd like to offer you that. And if you're smart, you'll say, yeah, that sounds like a much... And he says, and it's cheaper, too. You don't have to do all these austerities and... Oh, okay. And some people are like, nope, that's what I came for. That's what I want. Okay, fine. Take it. Go ahead. And then what happens? The person after some time, usually, not always, comes and says, can I have the other thing? But not always. Not always. Daksha didn't. Daksha came to the Lord, I want this. And Daksha was experiencing bhava. And the Lord's like, okay, you can have that. And he didn't come to a higher platform. That's there also. But yeah, Krishna will offer. He'll give an invitation. If you come to the Lord, no matter what, he will pretty much always offer the higher invitation. But there's still free will on our part. He's not going to shove it down your throat, you know? But he's going to offer an invitation. And so it may appear that the devotee who went to the Lord for something in particular didn't get what they wanted. It may look like that externally. Sudama thought, I didn't get what I wanted. I didn't get anything. And it's okay. I don't care. I guess I didn't deserve it. So it may look like that. Now, if a devotee doesn't see that Krishna is offering something better, they may become bitter. If they kind of go in between, you know, they're not really taking the higher thing that will satisfy them. They're just seeing Krishna says, keep saying, take this, take this, take this. I want that. Take this, take this, take this. But you're not giving me. Take this, take this. So sometimes that happens too. All right, I think we should end now. Once again, there is a table downstairs with some of my books. We have two new books there. One on how to see Krishna in everything, in your breath, in the heat of the room, in the sunlight, in the ocean. And the other is how to find out what is your nature, how to have the perfect livelihood according to your nature, how one can use one's nature in Krishna's service, and how to have a perfect society. So Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Don't know, you never have an introduction at the end, Prabhu. Anyway, the whole purpose of an introduction is to give the audience faith in the speaker. That's his whole function. There's no other function of it. If you don't introduce somebody, then the speaker has to spend the first 10 or 15 minutes developing faith. That's fine. But an introduction at the end has no value. So please, just forget about it. If they want to find out anything about me, they can look on my website. And
thank you. Thank you very much. Urmila Devi Dasi for coming and giving us this class here today. So let us express our gratitude by loudly chanting three times, Hari Bol, Hari Bol, Hari Bol. And as Prabhu said, these books are there down, so please do have a look at them. And for further information, you can always refer to Prabhu's website, urmiladevidasi.org. Hare Krishna.